Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
This is a CC Radio podcast.
It was just the most massive thing I've ever seen. To tell you the honest truth, I thought, well, we're the only ones left on this planet. Something's happened. We've missed something here.
The fear that went in me when I seen it was just like the feeling. I'd say it was fear, but I've never felt that feeling before in my entire life.
It's a weird feeling, like you can't explain it when you don't know. You feel like you're being followed, but you don't know what it is.
We had two to our right, another one in front of us, another one to the left, and another one just across the road, shaking the daylight out of the tree. All we get was a big red eye.
I remember waking up and looking at the end of the bed, and there was a figure there, almost insect-like, and then I blacked out.
Welcome to the show, everyone. You are listening to Believe Paranormal and UFO Radio. My name is Cade Moyer, and thanks for tuning in. If you've had an encounter, get in touch with me. My email address is believe@ccradio.com.au, or you can message me on Facebook at facebook.com/believeUFOradio. If you enjoy this episode, there are a few things you can do to help the show. Firstly, you can go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating and review. Or you can share the show around social media with your friends and family, and that would help us grow. Tonight I'm joined by Matthew, and Matthew's had some pretty amazing encounters with a UFO and a Yowie. Matthew, welcome to the show.
Oh, hi, Kate. Thank you for having me on the show. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you on, mate. I always get excited when people have multiple encounters, and you've had two of my favorite, a UFO and a Yowie. But let's start off with the UFO encounter, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure. So I kept the two accounts as separate because I felt that if I sort of put them together, I'd be discrediting one or the other. But just recently, or in now, this UFO Yowie connection that seems to be becoming quite widespread, it's helped me sort of I guess combine the two and talk about them as one sort of collective experience. So in regards to the UFO encounter, which is the first one I saw, I probably was would have been about 94 or 95. I think it would have been sort of 10 or 11 at the time. And we had built a property up at in the country, somewhere near Woodend. It was sort of on the top of a hill which looked out towards Mount Macedon. And one day, one afternoon, it was probably a Sunday, I was in the kitchen, which has a window which looks out towards Mount Macedon. And I noticed in the distance a silver, like, cigar tube shaped, or the classic UFO shape, out there on the horizon. And I was just staring at it for a while, and my dad was nearby as well. And I said, "Oh, Dad, you know, what do you think this is?" And we both stood in the kitchen looking out the window, trying to sort of work it out. You know, was it a weather balloon? Was it sort of a replica of like a Hindenburg blimp? We just couldn't quite work out what it was. It was quite strange because it was very large and appeared to be quite far off in the distance. I remember quite vividly because I didn't have any like windows or any sort of cabins or propellers coming off it, which is quite strange in itself. So we both went out of the house to have a better look, because when you're looking through the window of a kitchen, you know, the detail, you've got the sort of the window's a bit dirty, you've got a fly screen. So we went outside to have a better look at it. And we were probably staring at it for like 2 to 5 minutes, just him and myself discussing what it could be. We hadn't actually really said a UFO. We didn't really want to say it because it was just so just still and so physical. It's just so there. It wasn't sort of moving fast or it wasn't doing anything strange. It was just like just frozen there in the distance. And we're both there for a while. And my dad decided to go into the house to get my sister and his camera so he could take some photos. And he went back inside and I was still there staring at it. And then what I noticed was behind it and to the left, another one sort of, I guess you could say, materialized out of thin air. Materialized is the only way I can describe it. It just kind of faded into the view. It wasn't behind anything, behind a cloud, it couldn't have come anywhere. It just appeared like just over the course of half a second. And at that point, I just got this big sort of shiver up my spine, and I realized that what I was seeing here was otherworldly, or just nothing that, you know, modern technology at the time could explain it. And I realized that, you know, I must be looking at not just one UFO here, but two UFOs. And I was just staring at them for a while, and they just were there. They weren't doing anything. And then the second one that materialized just sort of just took off like in a rocket, just out sort of away from me and up and to the left. So, and as it took off, it just got, you know, smaller really quickly. So you could sort of tell it was moving away. And then the first one that appeared took off in the same direction. And at that point, my dad walks out with my sister out of the house, and I said, "Oh, you just missed it. It was gone." And it was, the timing was impeccable, actually, because, you know, had it been out just for a few more seconds, you probably could have got a photo of it. But it was unfortunate that he missed it. But I myself had a great look at it for quite a while. And afterwards, I was excited because I thought, on Monday when I'd go to school, that they'd be on the news and there'd be newspaper articles about it. And then I thought, oh, I'm going to tell everyone I had a, you know, front row seat of this thing, and it's going to be really exciting. And I was really shocked that Monday came and there was just no talk of it anywhere. Like, no one had heard about it. And it was really surprising because this thing was so huge. And Mount Macedon, which is where I saw it hovering over, is such a prominent landmark. And it just didn't really make sense that, you know, myself and my dad could see something like this and no one else talk about it.
So when you're referencing the scale there, Matthew, how big do you think the crafts were?
Oh, they had to be quite enormous, because if you look at something in the distance in the air, you can kind of see I don't know what the term is, but it's kind of like you can see atmosphere in front of something. It kind of looks a bit washed out.
And like there's that haze to it.
Yeah, yeah. And this, so it was probably about the distance of Mount Macedon, which is from where I was, I think 10 kilometers or something, eight to 10 kilometers. The ship itself was probably about nearly a third of the mountain size. So I actually tried to do some calculations on Google Maps and using references, and it seemed probably about 300 meters in size, which is absolutely massive. And the one that appeared behind it was a little bit further away, and it was probably about the same size. They both looked like the same type of craft. And yeah, we're talking 300 meters, and if I can see it at where I was, I could only imagine people on Mount Macedon, that they would have seen it, and people sort of at the Wood End Township would have seen it. And it was just so perplexing that my dad and I were the only one who had seen it. In fact, I thought it was a dream. I didn't actually realize that I'd seen it, because we didn't really talk about it that much. We just kind of, you know, forgot about it. And when I was at 18, I just started thinking about it more and more, and I asked my dad, I went to visit at the time, half embarrassed at a dinner party. At dinner. I said, "Do you remember, you know, maybe seeing something when we were, you know, when I was young over Mount Macedon?" And he just cut me off and he said, "Yeah, that silver UFO, yeah." And I couldn't believe it, because I thought about it on and off over years, but hadn't really thought that it was anything other than my imagination. And here he is telling me that he saw the same thing. And then we went over and sort of compared our notes, and yeah, they were exactly the same. And I never led him. I never sort of said, do you remember seeing a UFO or anything like that? He just kind of, he knew exactly what I was talking about. And it was such a huge relief, because it's something that was, causing me a bit of anguish as to whether it was real or not. And I just sort of dismissed it, and to realize, oh my God, this is real. And I did see it. It was almost like reliving the experience. And, you know, we'd talk about it occasionally until he unfortunately passed away a few years ago. I couldn't get any more details other than what I've just told you. But that was kind of a revelation, because, you know, someone else has seen it and has seen the same thing as me. And yeah, like I said, wasn't led or wasn't hinted. It was just out of the blue I asked him. And yeah, his details matched mine, which was quite a shock.
And I could imagine it would have been a real weight off your shoulders, because how old were you when you saw that UFO for the first time?
So I probably would have been about 10 or 11.
Oh, wow. So that was nearly a decade that thing's just been replaying in your mind, and you weren't totally sure if it was a real event.
Yeah, because like I said, I did occasionally would Google, like, you know, UFO sighting, Macedon, and I try to find just anything, and there was just nothing there. So I just kind of thought, well, you know, it must have been a dream. And I just, you know, it wasn't until I was at dinner with him that I just decided, you know, I'm going to put a stop to this once and for all. I'm going to find out whether this really happened. And I asked him, and yeah, I was really shocked that he actually had seen the same thing I did. And yeah, once again, I, as much as it was great that had seen it, it also gave me more questions as well. Like, you know, how come no one else saw it? And I heard about group hallucinations, and I looked into a lot of possible explanations for it. But it was just so real, like what I saw up in the sky at that time, and just what he told me as well is so exact to what I'd seen too. And it just seemed like there wasn't any sort of ambiguity. It was almost like what he described was a facsimile of what I'd seen, and that kind of really reinforced that, you know, we'd both seen something.
Absolutely. And when you have an encounter with someone and they really corroborate what you saw, it gives your experience so much more credence, and there's a solidarity to it that you know that this 100% happened. I'm not going crazy. I wasn't making this up. This is something that was right there in front of us, and we genuinely saw. We saw a pair of UFOs.
Yeah, well, he actually didn't see the second one. So he'd gone back inside to get my sister, and then I saw the second one show up, and then I saw them both take off together. So, but what he described me in terms of the first one, the location, and the shape of it, the size, that was exact, which is, you know, which is really what surprised me. And what I'd seen afterwards, unfortunately he didn't get to see that as well, but it didn't take away from the additional one showing up, because that was the event that made me realize, oh my God, this is something else. This isn't a balloon. This isn't a balloon's pretty much the only possible thing that could, you know, be that size. This is something that is some other, you know, self-propelled craft that can travel at enormous speeds and materialize out of thin air. And there, that was the,
and that's exactly it, because you can see that first one there, and you can say, oh, maybe that's a balloon floating there or something like that. But when you see a second one kind of just materialize out of nothing, it kind of makes you go, okay, this isn't normal. This is something different.
Yeah, and just the fact that they just traveled off at such a great speed, if it was for however possibility, I mean, I couldn't even fathom it being a balloon, just because of its size, and it just moved away so quickly and just traveled. A lot of sightings that they'll see, or a lot of videos you'll see of UFOs, they'll dart to the left or to the right, but this one actually kind of went up and sort of, if I'm looking east, kind of, yeah, up and to the east, which is so I actually saw it disappear, like go off into nothingness, basically. It just kind of traveled so far away so quickly, and I just saw it go from a large size to a small size, and then to nothing in the space of like a tenth of a second. It was quite incredible. And no sound or anything like that either.
Yeah, for sure. And with it being as big as what you said it is, that's something that's so incredible, because to see a craft that's 300 meters, you roughly say, to move at that speed, that is something that is nothing on this world can do that. I don't care what anyone says. Nothing that is 300 meters big, let alone 10 meters big, could move that fast.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the thing that I think about the most when I think of that site, just the speed of it just disappearing, and the direction that it went in as well. And then, of course, you know, just the way that the other one materialized. So there was actually a thin kind of wispy cloud that was there, and it kind of materialized just behind the cloud. So it was really strange, because it wasn't like it could have come out from behind a mountain or come out from anywhere. It just appeared out of thin air. And it wasn't just like a light switch coming on. It kind of just I don't want to say slowly, but it just materialized in there. And it's like nothing I'd never seen before. I mean, you see it on television, but to see it like half, you know, in front of you, it does. It sends the hair on the back of my neck up, you know, even today thinking about it, because it was quite an amazing experience. And I mean, we see things, we see lights moving in the sky, and we can always have a possible explanation, but something like that, there's just nothing. And I've really tried to come up with any logical, to use that term loosely, explanation, and it just evades me every time.
Yeah, and it's a really fascinating encounter, because it's not very often that I hear or see or even read about UFOs that seem to materialize, the way I'm kind of taking it is that it almost had like a cloaking device on it, because maybe it was hiding in the clouds and the cloaking device got turned off or something like that. You know, I'm shooting in the dark here, but that's the impression that I take from it, because it's so unique.
Yeah, the cloaking is the best way to describe it. I mean, it was like three times the size of the cloud, and it was a very faint wispy cloud. It wasn't anything you could hide anything but behind of as well. So that cloud, which I you know, remember, that's what I sort of, that cloud was kind of like my reality, the thing that I'm familiar with. You know, we see clouds all the time, and then to have that next to it, it kind of like was my measurement as to this is real, and then this behind it is completely different. And yeah, the two of them were just there occupying that same space, and yet just materialized now, nothing, and then was there for not very long. The two of them were together, and then they just disappeared off into the distance, just like that.
So how long do you think this whole experience went for?
So I'll probably say it's very hard because it was so long ago, but I got a very good look at it. We were looking at it, discussing it in the kitchen. Then we walked outside, looked at it for a while. Then my dad went inside to get the camera. And my sister, and then he was in there for, he seemed like he was in there for a while. I must have been staring at it for a good, I don't know, maybe 10 minutes or something like that. So I got to stare at it for a very, very long time and sort of come up with all kinds of possibilities of what it is, and just look for just anything on there that might give it away. And like I said, there was no windows, there was no engine, there was no cabin, there was nothing coming off it. It was just, if you Google like cigar tube, that's exactly the shape. It's kind of thin, long, and rounded at either edge. And like I said, the other object was the same too, a little bit smaller, because I think it was a little bit further away from the first object I saw. And disappearing. And the thing that racks my brain about it so much is that, you know, no one else saw it. I mean, am I seeing it at a specific angle that its cloaking isn't working, or what is it about me and my dad that we can see it, and then the who knows how many thousands of people in the area can't? It's one of the things that I had the most trouble coming to grips with, and one of the biggest reasons why I thought it was a dream and not real was, you know, the fact that it was just us, ourselves.
And the thing is, Matthew, you probably will never know the answer to that question. It's just going to be something that will sit with you forever, because unless there was someone else in that area who listens to this podcast and can I guess, get in contact with us to let you know, yeah, hey, I definitely saw this. I was in that area. It's just one of those things that may just go unanswered for you, unfortunately.
Yeah, oh, that was, if anyone had seen it or anything like that around that time, so it probably would have been 94, 95, and sort of the southern side of Mount Macedon towards, there's kind of like a garden and a cross, which is a landmark of Mount Macedon. It was probably about around that area. Yeah, if anyone has, that'd be great. They can get in touch. But like I said, I've been scouring the net for years and haven't found anything even remotely. I've actually seen on YouTube a video of a UFO that looks exactly the same. I think it was in it's in Europe somewhere. It might have been in Italy. But that's, yeah, that's amazing because that is exactly like what I saw. But it was a bit small. It was a bit closer to the camera. But that's the closest I've gotten to any sort of, I guess, current evidence or that, yeah, of what it was.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Matthew, that's an absolutely fascinating encounter with a UFO. It's really interesting. Like I said earlier, I really like those stories that are, you know, seeing a UFO is out of the normal, but then to go that extra step with that encounter and have it do something that you weren't really expecting, I think that really gives a nice touch to, I guess, I would say a non-threatening type of UFO encounter. It really makes that rememberable for yourself.
Yeah, I never felt any fear from it. It just seemed too far away for me to be concerned. But I, of course, I went through all the motions when I'm watching this thing. I'm like, you know, is this a blimp? Is this a balloon? Is this some sort of alien invasion? Like, I went through A to Z of emotions and thoughts just staring up at this thing. And yeah, and then it just disappeared, and with it, like any evidence of it ever existing. And then I just have to, you know, go back to normal life. And I guess that's a similar experience that a lot of people who have seen these things have to go through. Just, you know, 1 minute you're seeing something which is life changing, and then all of a sudden, yeah, you just kind of have to go back to what you're doing before and just deal with it. And in my case, I put it sort of in the back of my head until it became just a distant memory. And then, I mean, I wasn't even sure if it was real or not, which is very similar to the Yowie sighting, which I had not much later after that too.
Is that something you want to talk about? Because I am absolutely enthralled with this Yowie encounter that you got, because it really, really fascinates me. And now a quick word from our sponsor.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Also, are you wanting more content? Why not become a Believe Plus member? You'll get access to exclusive podcasts and episodes that aren't available to the public. Not only that, you'll also get our regular feed without any ads. Head to believepod.com/plus to sign up today for just $5 a month.
Oh, yeah, I'm happy to talk about it now because, I mean, listening to your podcast and hearing people coming out and telling their side, I think it's very brave of them to do it. And I myself have been just thinking about this for so long, and it's only recently that I've decided to talk to people about it. And I've told my family, and I've tried to get more information. I mean, my sister remembers some aspects of the day. My mum doesn't. Unfortunately, my dad, he's passed away. I can't really get much more information out of him, unfortunately. But, you know, and it's just things that help me piece together what happened that day and basically sort of make it more more real, I suppose, because, like I said, it'd become just a distant memory and a dream and a thought. And, you know, when you don't think about something for so long, sometimes you're not even sure if it actually happened. And that's exactly what happened with the Yowie experience there, which I'm happy to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you able to walk us through that encounter?
Yeah, absolutely. So it was probably, it wasn't long after the UFO sighting could have been like could have been a few weeks, could have been a couple of months. It's definitely within the year. So it would have been probably a Saturday or a Sunday, because that's when we go up to this to our property up there at Wood End. And as a kid, when we go up there, I didn't have any sort of computer or PlayStation. So what I used to do for hobbies, I just used to walk around the bush, which I absolutely loved doing. I'd, you know, just go exploring and, you know, as you do in the bush, you just keep walking. You pick a direction and you keep walking. And this particular day, I decided to go to an area which I don't normally visit. I'm not too sure why this particular area of the bush, it's not like I was scared of it, but I just kind of, I don't know, I just generally avoided it. So this time I thought, you know what, I'm going to walk through it and finally see what I've been missing. And this day I was walking down there, probably about midday, it was warm weather, and my first thing I noticed was this smell of like a dead carcass, essentially. I've come across carcasses before. I don't know, when you're a young kid, you almost have like a macabre fascination with, you know, finding dead stuff. I don't know why, but so I'm trying to find this thing, which I thought might have been a sheep that got attacked by a fox, which is very, very common. So the thing that I found really strange was I'd be walking in this area of bushland and the smell would be so strong, like it'd just be on the tip of my nose, like I'm standing on top of it, and then I'd take a step to the left or to the right and then I'd just be gone. And I couldn't quite work out what this is, because usually you can trace the sense of the smell and then you can walk towards it, but it was just sort of here and then it was gone. And I'm trying to work out what this could be. I remember thinking maybe a fly landed on my nose or something that had fallen, that had come off a, you know, off a sheep. And I was just trying to put this together, and eventually, probably doing this for 10 minutes, I couldn't find the source of it. And I started to keep walking down this track. It was like an old four-wheel drive track. And I'm walking down there, and I just sort of see to the left of me, there's like a burnt-out tree stump. And then next to the stump's kind of like the fallen, it was like a tree had fallen, and then the stump had sort of, you know, burnt out a little bit. And I saw kind of like a round head there, and I do like a double take, because, you know, normally when you're in the bush, you'll always see something strange, and you look at it twice, and, oh, okay, no, it's just this. So you look at it, you know, you could always find an explanation. But I did this double take, and then I just saw this face just staring at me from behind this tree stump, which was probably about 4 foot tall. And it was the most strangest thing I'd ever seen. I'd never seen anything like it. It wasn't like a monkey. It wasn't like an orangutan. It wasn't any creature that I'd seen on TV or in a book or a magazine. It's just proportions were kind of strange. Its eyes were huge, like they were giant, big black eyes, and its skin was kind of black or gray. Its hair was short, and it was just staring at me. And I wouldn't have been too far away, probably about 10 meters or something, and I'm just staring at this thing, and I'm waiting for my imagination to, like, for reality to catch up to my imagination. I'm waiting for it to go, to see what it really is. And I'm just looking at this thing, and I can see it sort of moving behind the stump, like it's kind of like readjusting itself. And then I'm realizing, oh my god, this is there's something living there, and it's staring at me, and I don't know what it is. And I didn't know what to do. I just froze there and just stood at it, because, you know, I had no other explanation. I wasn't quite scared, but I was just so shocked, and I was just frozen there, and this thing was just staring at me, and I was just staring at it. And this seemed to go on for probably only a minute, but it just seemed like it was going on forever. And I started sort of getting my thoughts and realizing, this is some strange animal here. And I think now I think about it, maybe I might have taken a step towards it, or I don't know, something happened, but to break this stalemate. And then this creature kind of opened up its mouth a little bit, and these two kind of like canines or fangs or whatever, kind of just, they're like on its upper mouth, and they just kind of popped out over its lip as it kind of opened its mouth a little bit. These teeth showed up, and then I just instantly went from curiosity to absolute fear. The only thing that could have teeth like that is something that, you know, would eat meat and could possibly eat me. And I'm here on my own about, you know, 500 meters from the house. And I just turned and I just ran for my absolute life as fast as I could back to the house to try to get away from this thing. I'm thinking that, you know, I'm dead, that this thing's going to grab me and eat me and whatever, and no one's going to know. And I'm just running. I just remember vividly just running back as fast as I can and thinking, I'm not running fast enough. You know, like you're when you're in a dream and you're running from something and you just feel like you just can't escape. And I'm just thinking that this thing is far more athletic than me. And if this thing wants to catch me, it can, and I'm dead and no one's going to know what happened to me. They're going to, you know, I just had all this time to go through these thoughts and I'm running and running and I couldn't look back because I just didn't want to. I thought that as soon as I looked back, this thing would be an arm away from me. And I sort of ran through this fence, through this gate, besides this fence, across this paddock. And then the second fence, I have to kind of, it's like a wire fence. So you have to crouch to get through it. And I thought as I was doing it, okay, this time I'm going to look back. And then as I looked back, I realized it wasn't there. And that was a relief, but nonetheless, I still ran as fast as I could back to the house. And as fast as I'd ever run before, I got back to the house. I was absolutely just exhausted. My chest was burning. I was so thirsty. I'd never, like, pushed myself like I did that day. And I just screamed. I said to my dad, Dad, you know, there's a monkey. And out there, and normally my parents would be very supportive of anything that I'd seen or witnessed or anything that happened to me, but I just remember he just laughed and said, there's no monkeys in Australia. And that was a complete shock to me because I know what I'd seen, and he just dismissed it, and I was really shocked. And you know, for weeks after, I begged him to come out to see this thing. I said, Dad, please come out. It's going to be still there. And, you know, about a month later, finally, after constantly hounding him, he finally walked down there with me and my sister. And I went up to the, walked down up to the tree, and I thought, this is it. You know, I'm either going to see something that looked like the face, or, you know, or I'm going to see this creature again, or something that's going to help me shine some light on it. And there was just the stump, and there was just nothing behind it. And I thought, well, there's nothing here that could have tricked me, and nothing could have cued me to see what I saw. And yeah, that was it. You know, never spoke of it again. And afterwards, I was just too scared to go out of the house. I just used to stay in the house every weekend. And my mum and dad would say, you know, go out for a walk. And I just, I couldn't do it. And it was probably about, and 6 months later, I finally worked up the courage just to travel a small distance. And then the next day, I traveled a little bit further. And eventually, I just kind of, just to help me, you know, live a normal life, I just kind of had to forget about it. And I couldn't talk to anybody about it because no one would have believed me. So it just kind of went from this big experience to just fading away into the back of my mind. And you know, for the longest time, I had never really thought about it or remembered it. It was kind of just there vaguely, but like my UFO thing, I just thought maybe it was a dream. But yeah, it was, you know, 15 years or so more after that I'd sort of gotten into the Yowie and the Bigfoot phenomenon. And then I saw a picture which was very similar to what I'd seen. It was basically a Yowie with big black eyes, and it was the big black eyes which triggered the memory and made me realize that hang on, I think I'd actually seen it. And then I would think about it more, and then I remembered the smell that happened before, the walking around the bush smelling this rotten smell. And then I looked it up and realized, you know, this is actually a common trait for people to see these things. And then I remember the running back to the house, running for my life, which, was very, very, very scary. And then I remember later on just trying to readjust and get life back to normal. And when I put the whole thing together, it just painted this detailed picture of what happened that day. And that helped me fill in the blanks and realize, you know, I have actually seen something.
Matthew, that's an incredible encounter. That is, it sounded like this thing was stalking you, because the first thing that kind of comes to my mind is that you're trying to pinpoint where this smell is coming from, and every time where you think it is, it moves. So to me, that makes it sound like this Yowie was moving around you, trying to either evade you or get in front of you to put you maybe in that vulnerable position that you were potentially in.
Yeah, I think it was trying to avoid me. Just because the way I saw it behind the tree, it wasn't sort of threatening. It was kind of like hiding behind it, which helped me sort of alleviate my initial fears, which is probably why I think I may have tried to approach it a little bit or just done something to really spook it out. And also the size of it, I didn't mention it before, but it wasn't like the traditional, it wasn't a massive Yowie. This thing was young. I don't know if I could describe it as, it might have been like they call it Jinjari, the smaller Yowie, which is sort of, I've found is more sort of common in northern parts of Australia. But I think it may have been sort of a juvenile, just because I just felt like this thing was young. I don't know how to describe it. It didn't seem old and weary. It seemed just kind of, young. Yeah, just young is the only way I can describe it. I mean, you know, its skin was sort of smooth. It had the brow ridges. The eyes were kind of set. Its mouth was kind of like those round, like a mouth of like an orangutan. You know, it's like the round part where the mouth is. And extremely wide. Which is what was, I remember being so eerily about it, was this proportions. Like its eyes were huge and were kind of wider apart than what you'd normally see in a monkey. And its mouth was very, very wide, and it was more wider than any other creature. It just seemed out of proportion for any other creature that I'd seen sort of in a book or on television. So that's why I was really sort of shocked about it. And then, of course, the teeth, when I saw those, I remember that so vividly, those white fangs just popping out from behind its lips when it just opened its mouth a little bit. It never made a noise, never lunged at me. I think it was just trying to tell me to stay away and not to get close. But that was more than enough that I needed to turn and run. And I'm just glad this thing didn't try to eat me, because I wouldn't have had a chance. I mean, this whatever this thing was, it could definitely have hurt me.
You know, greatly. I think you saw a Jundjidi as well, because what you've described fits more within that type of creature, more so than the Yowie, because the thing that really stands out for me is those large, black, wide-set eyes, because a lot of the Yowie reports that I hear, they say the eyes are very human-like, or they're very monkey-like, but they're not far set apart, or they're not overly large. They're kind of in proportion to what the creature is. But the reports that I hear about Jundjidis are that the eyes are set further apart, and they're very, very large, and they're like jet black.
Yes. This thing was black. I never saw any pupils, or I never saw into its eyes, as you would, you know, when you look into a normal, and if like a person or a cat or a dog, you can look into its eyes. This thing, I couldn't see. It was almost like it was wearing a mask, you know. But it's just eyes were just black, and like they're just soulless. They had nothing. There was nothing there. There was no sort of character, and they were just so wide. And I remember the wrinkles above it, and it's into the side of it, its sort of face. It was just, it never blinked or anything like that. It just stared at me, and just, you know, those eyes are the most vivid part of the experience, more so than the, obviously apart from the teeth. Basically, the eyes and the teeth were the most vivid parts, and yeah, those are things that I would remember. I'd love to have the chance of doing some sort of hypnosis or regression therapy, just to remember any more details about it, just to see if there's anything there that I might have missed, because it's something that, strangely enough, I'd love to see again. probably not in the same circumstances, like sort of walking on my own in the middle of nowhere. But I've always been sort of fascinated and drawn into the subject of the Yowie / Bigfoot, even before I realized that I'd actually seen this thing.
So you were a believer before you saw this?
Yeah, I wasn't. I was a very skeptical for the longest time, which helped me, I guess, repress this memory. And then I remember probably 2009 or something, you know, 10, I was on the internet, and I came across this video of the Patterson-Gimlin footage, and it was like an analysis, like a HD analysis, and I kind of just thought, oh, this thing again, bullshit, this Bigfoot bullshit, you know, there's no way this is true. And I watched it for 5 minutes, and they talked about things that I never thought about, like the gait of it, the size in comparison of what was going on around it, and just its physical characteristics and how it's impossible for a person in a suit to mimic that kind of walk and those that kind of joint movement and things like that. And then that kind of got me into it, and I sort of read a bit about more, and then I looked into the Yowies and actually joined the Yowie research, just to stalk on the site and to read some people's accounts and stuff. And yeah, that all happened quite a few years before I remembered my experience. And like I said, what just triggered that was, you know, one night going down the rabbit hole, just looking up pictures of Yowies, and then this one came across where someone had drawn a picture of it, and it just had these giant black eyes. And I looked into these black eyes at the picture, and it just clicked on. I just realized, hang on, did I really? I think I might have seen something like this. No, it's, you know, probably just watching too much videos and stuff. And then I just think of it over and over again, and I remember a little more detail, like the walking around and the smelling it, which is something I'd remembered previously, but didn't connect it to what I'd seen. And then I remember the hiding out in the house and not wanting to go out. You know, these are memories that I remembered outside of the experience, but didn't realize they were all combined as part of one event. It was quite interesting. It's like someone had gone to my brain with an eraser and just erased the most important part and just left everything else. And yeah, when I put the whole experience together, from the smelling to the seeing to the running to the trying to get my parents to go see this thing, and then eventually to me walking into the bush again, you know, first a few meters, then a few more meters, and then eventually back to where I am now, where I can just go into the bush normally and not worry about those things.
So it hasn't scared you out of the bush anymore?
No, definitely not. Maybe it should have, but I've been reading about the Yowie and you know, the Sasquatch and just things that go on in the bush for so many years. I don't know if I'm sure many people can relate. It just gives you this desire to just want to go out and want to experience it for yourself. And I just want to see. I just want to see it in person one more time, just up close, you know, undeniable, and just see it and just experience it. Because I've had close calls out in the bush. I'm an avid camper. I usually go camping sort of around the east side in the mountainous areas of Victoria, where there had initially been a lot of sightings. And I would, you know, hear things and you have your little experiences, but, you know, unless you actually see one up close, you know, head to toe or undeniably see it and its features, you know, you can always say, oh, maybe I saw this or maybe I saw something else. But yeah, nothing would beat to be able to see it up close and in the flesh again like I did as a kid. Even though I'd probably do the same thing, I'd probably run for my life, but it doesn't change the desire to want to see something like that again. Definitely.
And I think that's a really good outcome from having an experience like this, because the experience that you had, it's quite terrifying, and you were quite young when it happened, so that could really leave a lot of emotional scars around, you know, going into the bush, having a lot of anxiety about something like that. And the fact that you've really come out of it at the end of it, which is, you know, I guess your story now is that you're happy to go back into the bush, and you almost have this drive to have an encounter like that again. I think that's really good.
Yeah, I mean, living up in the country for a good part of my, well, not permanently, but sort of, I'd spend school holidays and weekends up there. It was kind of like I had to forget about it. I had to make peace with it just in order to enjoy living up there. I mean, I couldn't lock myself in the house for my entire adolescent years up there. I just, you know, the bush is beautiful. When you're out there, you're walking and you can, you know, the wind through the trees and you can see the animals. And it's something that is a big part of my childhood. And I wouldn't let anything jeopardize that, even seeing what I'd seen.
So before we wrap up tonight there, Matthew, what do you think the Yowie is? What do you think the Jundjidee is?
Well, initially it was, I thought, this thing's got to be flesh and blood. This got to be some kind of, you know, unknown primate that's been in the bush. But I've read so many accounts and seen so many documentaries, and there just has to be something else there. I mean, there's been sightings in islands and in top of mountains, and there's just places where there's just, I can't see them surviving there or living there unseen. And then there's cases of, you know, footprints that just stop in the middle of nowhere, and singular footprints and people seeing them materialize, and just really strange stuff that I initially would just dismiss. And it just keeps coming up and up again from legitimate sightings. And I believe, which is another reason why I'm finally confident with coming out with both my accounts, was that there is some sort of connection between the two. I don't know what it is. I don't know how it is. But I just feel that there is something more to it. There's some sort of interdimensional explanation, because that's the only way I can explain so many what just seem like legitimate encounters, that there must be something else. And it took me a while to just embrace that, because, you know, once you go down that rabbit hole, you could come up with any number of theories and things that are unproven and untested. And but there is something there. I do believe that it is some sort of interdimensional creature, and that I also think that it may be people who have seen them tend to see them again as well. I just think that there's also some personal connection between people who see this thing. And you know, I've had accounts since then of where I've seen and heard strange things, nothing like what I'd initially seen, but they're just things that make me realize that maybe I'm just on the edge of perceiving this thing, and many other people are in a similar place. And that's my personal belief. You can go into the whole quantum theory, quantum Bigfoot theory and stuff like that, but just personally, that's my thoughts on the matter. And that also helps me with my personal sort of research there, because I don't go out with all this equipment and to find this thing again. I just go out, you know, by myself or with my friends, and then we don't take any sort of cameras or anything like that, or trail cams, because they just seem to know that stuff's around, and they just seem to keep away from it. And the less I try to capture this thing, the more likely I am to witness it again. And I think that's the same for other people as well.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% on that. I think that's the best way to go about it, because not to kind of, I guess, poo-poo anyone's ideas when they go out to try find these Yowies, because I mean, no one really knows what they are. And I think that's half the fun of, you know, the Yowie, is that no one knows what they are. But you're pretty much spot on with the fact that they do seem to know when someone's put up a trail cam or something like that, because they just never show up on them, or they break, or they malfunction, or something happens. It's you hear it 100 times.
Yeah, the biggest clincher for me was so around the time that dash cams became the norm, I was rubbing my hands together because so many people had seen these things out on the road. And I thought, now that dash cams are a thing, these sightings are just going to start flooding in. And dash cams have been, you know, common in people's vehicles for 8 to 10 years now. And there's been no proper footage. Apart from that police cop car footage from the States from a few years back, there's been a couple other stills, but there's never been anything like eyewitness accounts that have been captured on a dash cam. And I just feel that they're just aware of almost like their impression on the universe. I don't know how to describe it, but they just seem to know how to avoid being recorded and yeah, that's the way I can describe it.
And you know what? You may just be right there, Matthew. And I think that's the great thing about the Yowie is that everyone can have their own theory, their own hypothesis about it, because at the end of the day, we don't know yet. And anyone's guess could be right.
Yeah, I don't think we will find them for what they are for a while. They're just too elusive. They're just not, you know, it's just too hard to get even just the proper evidence aside from scat, maybe some hair samples and DNA. But people talk about finding bodies and stuff, and it's just been too hard. I mean, if I could talk for hours about the accounts I've read of people finding bodies and what ends up happening to them. But at the end of the day, nothing, it doesn't progress. So it does leave a lot of room for people to come up with their own ideas and to think about it. And that's, that in itself is pretty fascinating. And to have people thinking outside of the normal paradigm is good. It's healthy for humanity.
I think so too. I think so too. Well, Matt, it's been great having you on the show, mate. Your encounters are being, they're incredible. There's no other words that I can really say. The UFO encounter that you had, and you shared it with your dad, and I think that was absolutely fascinating. And this Yowie / Junjidi encounter is absolutely amazing, because a lot of people would only dream to come face to face with one of these creatures, and you, my friend, are one of those lucky people.
Yeah, I mean, it was so long ago, and it's just a memory now, and I'm just not satisfied. I want to see things like that again, and I'm going to be out there looking like a lot of people. And yeah, I guess I am one of the lucky ones in that regard. I'm sure there's plenty more out there. There's plenty more other people that have seen a similar thing, and they just haven't had that time for them to come out and talk about it. And you know, if they're out there and they want to do it, they should feel comfortable about it. And I myself, I'm not trying to convince anyone. I mean, they if I heard it, it would sound preposterous, but I just, it's something that's just sat with me for so long, and I just think it's time that I get it off my chest. And like I said, these kind of things, you kind of have to see it to believe it. So I'm not trying to, you know, convince anyone, and you know, if there's people out there that are skeptical, I endorse that. I say it's good on you. You should be skeptical, but at the same time, just keep looking, and you'll eventually see something, I promise.
And that's going to do it for tonight. And remember, if you have had an encounter, get in touch with me. My email address is believe@ccradio.com.au. Or you can message me on Facebook, and that's facebook.com/believeUFO radio. Until next time, stay safe, and you've been listening to Believe, Australian Paranormal and UFO Radio.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.